Janet Gallen welcoming you to Love Letters Live. Today's guest is spectacular, and we just met, 48 seconds ago, and I asked Renee McKenna how she liked to be introduced, and the look on her face just bespoke something very complicated. And I said, don't tell me, now you do it for everybody. You say how you'd like to be introduced because you do so many things.
How I like to be introduced. You know, I was just discussing this with my husband as I knew we were going to be talking today. Which hat do I wear? And I'm really at a place in my life of wanting to put all the hats in one box and make them one hat.
Oh, I was going to say, they're so connected anyway.
I hope so.
Because they are an expression of your strongest self, all the ones that I can see.
Well, that's very kind. So, I am a spiritual teacher, and I'm teaching art this afternoon to my fifth graders.
When you say to your fifth graders, do you have a regular classroom that you teach art to?
So I started an art program at my daughter's school because there wasn't one.
Oh, so you do classes.
Yeah, okay. So I teach to kindergarten and fifth grade.
That's what I wondered.
Yeah, okay. It's really lovely. So I was recently lead of the Women's March in San Francisco, which is one of my newer hats. I'm a Girl Scout leader.
Ah.
I'm an artist. Uh-huh. I'm a public artist, sometimes a guerrilla public artist.
Uh-huh. Which means what?
Which means you go out in the middle of the night and you do stuff that is non-damaging, but that you probably couldn't get permission to do.
Okay, so I once saw, I forget where it was, I think it was in Los Angeles, trees down a median in the street, mm-hmm. just bejeweled with ribbons and all kinds of beautiful stuff. Would that be something?
That's
that
actually
count?
One of the things exactly what I do. I call it public knitting,
where
I create, it's known as yarn bombing also, where you knit things for public creatures like trees and telephone poles.
How does the city feel, and who sends you the thank you note once you've made something more interesting?
Actually, I have gotten quite a few thank you notes from local people.
Good.
When they see them. It's fun. It's a non-destructive thing.
Sure.
Occasionally, they get taken down. It's some of the fun is figuring out where they can go, where they won't get taken down. So, for example, things aren't allowed in public parks. They'll be down within 48 hours.
Is that because everybody will start to do it?
Yeah. San Francisco has very strict rules about stuff like that. And so that's some of the fun is finding places where people will be able to appreciate it, mm-hmm. where I'll be able to get away with doing it, and where it won't be taken down
quickly. Last a little longer.
Yeah.
Okay, so talk more about what you do.
So it's interesting, you know, talking about it all melding together is really probably the thing I'm doing right now.
What does a spiritual teacher mean? Can I back up a minute and ask you?
Sure. So it depends which hat you want to look at.
That one.
So I, as a young person, I was a very troubled person and really, really got into drugs and alcohol.
Oh.
And petty crime, even. And had a really profound experience in my early 20s.
Oh, was
and that? Basically, a woman saved my life.
Oh,
yeah.
My.
She was a recovering person, and she told me, she had been watching me, and she told me her story, and she said, I think you have a problem. And, you know, when someone tells another person the truth, you can't deny that. It gets
in. I thought you were going to say something different, because many people, when somebody tells you the truth, the first thing you do is you throw that person away.
No. She spoke to me at exactly the right time, at exactly the right moment. And I really believe.
And must have done it in a loving way that you were able to absorb.
Actually, she wasn't a terribly loving person. But you know, I was ready to hear the message, and the messenger arrived. And so, you know, although it certainly wasn't like a Jesus moment or anything, I really realized through a series of circumstances that there was a force in the universe that cared directly, specifically about me, that I really felt like this woman had come at the perfect moment to tell me the perfect thing and changed my life forever. And so that began my spiritual journey. Up until then, I had really thought that my problems were to fix the outside. to make the inside feel better. If I could find the right boyfriend, lose the right amount of weight, get the right job, get the right degree, then I would feel okay inside. And none of those things worked.
Isn't that a common road?
It is. And so what that really set me on the path of personal growth and self-discovery and recovery is that it's really an inside job. And that the outside follows the inside.
That's what interior decoration really means.
It is. Absolutely. So, you know, when the inside is straightened out, then the outside takes care of itself.
Now, you must have had help doing that.
I've had a lot of help from lots of different
sources,
things.
Yeah. Oh,
yeah, over the last 30 years.
And then how did you take that to helping others?
Well, so I think in any great... I think in any great practice, in anything that we do, I would even imagine for yourself, you know, once we get to a certain place of being full, it becomes greed to just continue to take, and then you're out of integrity. And so we have to give things away in order to be able to keep them. And so that just became a natural extension of me trying to do to other people what was done to me, and then realizing that I really, really enjoyed working with other people in a deep way and sharing the kind of transformation that I had had with others and making that and letting them know that that was possible. And so ultimately I became a therapist.
Oh, uh-huh.
And while I was in school to become a therapist, I don't believe in coincidences. I was cleaning houses to make my way through college, and one of my clients was a hypnotherapist.
Oh, I read that on your website. Do you know how to hypnotize people?
I do.
That is one of the most impressive, mysterious talents of all. But go ahead.
It's actually not mysterious. And it's not a talent. And and the idea of hypnosis...
I have to let go of that. Yeah.
Where we do. I mean, it's got a whole woo-woo thing around it, but really...
Well, I've seen it in action in documentaries, and the results are just stunning. But go ahead.
Well, they really are, because when we drop into our own inner world, the results are stunning. And really all a hypnotherapist does is give people permission and a little bit of guidance to drop into their own inner world.
And that's, you use that in your therapy?
Absolutely.
So you're a hypnotherapist.
I'm a hypnotherapist. It's very, very powerful work. And it leads... There are many different ways to understand it. That's a very Western way to understand it.
Sure.
So I kind of became... a self-transformation junkie, I suppose. I really love personal growth and...
Well, look what it's done.
And the joy that it brings. So, pardon me. So, ultimately, that's led me to lots of different practices as I continue to seek. So, I've had a deep Buddhist meditation practice at different times. I learned a lot about shamanism, which is kind of like traditional hypnotherapy. It's about, yeah, really, it's just about dropping into your own inner world. It's a different way of knowing yourself and knowing the world. And ultimately also a deep Catholic practice. I'm kind of a mystic, so I like to have direct experience of things. And those direct experiences, again, as I've had them, sharing them with others is a natural extension of that. And so it ultimately looks like teaching. Mm-hmm. And so even in my therapy office, in my hypnotherapy work, a lot of what I'm doing is teaching people what I've been taught. So sometimes I do that in groups, sometimes I do it individually.
So that permission, I'm linking just a few words that you said together, mm-hmm. because I want to talk about the next thing. The permission and the passing on what you know and dropping into who you really are. Mm-hmm. That would be a natural segue to your part in the Women's March.
It is, actually.
Isn't it? Yes. So would you just talk about what first grabbed you about that? Well, gosh, I wish we had more time. Maybe we will. Because the whole era we're living in right now is
very powerful.
Certainly interesting.
So yes. Powerful.
And has some ramifications that we have to be careful about how we use it, mm-hmm. I think.
No, I think you're spot on.
So just talk about... When did you first realize that you would take part and organize the San Francisco one?
So it's a really powerful experience that I had. So I have not been a political person. I've, again, been much more interested in inner, in deeper work, because I believe that whatever's happening externally is the product of what's happening internally. So... but this election process was really engaging. And so I got on Facebook and was getting a lot of, you know, I was keeping up with what was happening. And which was really the first time. I'm not a big Facebook person. Because over the years, I've tried to connect with people on Facebook, and I've actually only met in person with like two people. Of people I've reconnected with. Most people, most of my Facebook experience remains only on Facebook. And I really like to actively, like, let's have coffee. Yes. And anyway, so, but I was on Facebook a lot because there was a lot of information that felt like quality information for me. And the night of the election, I stayed up and watched the whole thing. And woke up the next morning, and I have...
By the way, I didn't stay up and watch it because I knew how it was going to turn out. Imagine my surprise the next morning.
Well,
but go ahead. This isn't about
so,
you.
Lots of, so I woke up the next morning, and I have a daily meditation and prayer practice, a spiritual practice that I do. And, I mean, it's often my practice to ask, what does the universe want me to do? And kind of see what comes back at me. But it became much more ardent after the election. So, you know, that week, every day, I was spending more time really asking, what can I do? I know I have
now,
a lot of resources.
When you ask that, do you put in your own answers a little bit, or do you really just wait and see what evolves naturally?
So, you know, I believe in Taoism, there is a principle called Wu Wei. It's funny, I said this to my son the other day, and he said, woo-hoo? And I said, no, woo-way. And the principle is, it actually means non-doing.
Okay? That's what I'm asking.
But the thing about woo-way is that it's not about non-action. It's about connecting with the natural flow of life, that there is a life flow, and that if we, you know, I kind of see us like swimmers. So there's a river, and life's the river, and we're in the river. And so we can try to swim upstream, or we can float downstream. If we do nothing, we'll probably drown. We can swim and grab onto a branch and not go with the river. You know, or we can find the right stroke for us that moves with the water, that allows us. So I think that's our work, is to kind of find the optimal stroke. So we're working with the water, going with the flow, and not exhausting ourselves, but still moving along. So that's kind of...
Then what was the indication of what you should do?
So... When I ask, I kind of wait to see what, you know, I ask and things come. So like, you know, you contacted me or however things flow, right? So 4 days later on November 12th, Saturday morning, I opened up my Facebook and I saw Million Woman March on Washington. And I felt this jolt go through my body, which I have to say, I think 5 million other people felt at some point. There was just some resonance. I didn't even know what it was. Particularly, it wasn't even anything at that point. I said to my husband, what are we doing January 21st? He said, nothing. I walked over to the computer and I booked tickets to go to Washington, D.C.
Oh, my goodness.
I just knew I wanted to be there. And so I came back. I posted it on Facebook that I was going to go. Within an hour, I had like 50 people. What is it? I want to go. What's happening? What's the timing? Where are we going to stay? And that continued through the day of me just plugging into this building excitement of family and friends and their family and friends. And by that evening, I had tried to reach out to the, at that point, very fledgling state organization and national organization, and nobody got back to me. And I just knew that they were having, on a mega scale, what I was experiencing on a minor scale, which was kind of this viral experience. And so I'm a self-starting person, and I don't always ask for permission. So I said, I'm going to start a Facebook group to help other people organize to go to Washington, because there was enough people I knew and people I didn't know. Let's give everybody a place to talk about this. So I started a Facebook group, and in the morning, it had 500 members.
Oh.
And by that night, it had 1,000 members.
I'm going to cry.
And it was really, it was so powerful. I could just like watch people signing up to this thing that I had. I didn't create the Women's March, but this vehicle that I had created that pointed to it. Which
and
is
you, and you and you used the word permission before.
So interesting. Not asking permission. But I feel like
You gave others permission.
I gave others permission. Well, I had also asked I had asked the universe for permission. Okay. So later that day,
I got a phone call. This was the following day. I got a phone call from, again, someone in this fledgling women's march organization, and they said, you started a Facebook page. We don't know who you are. Are you crazy? Who are you? Right? And so, because, you know, there's a lot of interesting people out in the world. And so I told them who I am, and by the end of the conversation, they said, would you like to be the lead of San Francisco? And I said, yes.
Good for you.
And there's the answer to my question, what can I do?
Yes.
And I just knew it was the right
thing. Yes is one of my favorite words. Yeah.
So, and it happened, at, you know, to continue the river metaphor, I stopped swimming and got on a raft called Women's March, and we went down the Whitewater in record speed because we had to create an event that would normally take 6 months to a year in less than 8 weeks.
Okay, could I ask you a technical question about Sure. event planning, this sort of thing? Because I think it's nice for people to know, how do you do that? Like, what's the first thing you do when you want to create this event? You go to City Hall and ask for permission?
So that's an interesting question. I'm going to tell you, the first thing I did was ask God for help, because I have never done anything like this before, but I knew I was in the place that I was supposed to do it. So that's the first place I went. And then the first thing that we did was to connect with the community. And so we had a group. I said, let's meet at Tart to Tart in San Francisco. And about 20 women came, many of whom I had never met, most of whom I had never met. And we talked about what we wanted to do. And then the next thing that we did was to call the city and ask them, what do we do? And so the first stop really for us was to go to the police department and the traffic and parking.
Oh, so permits.
And to talk to them about what we would need for permits mm-hmm. and very practical and what would the timing be. And
did they say yes right away? Were they on your side? Were they exuberant about this? Or do they not have a...
So I have to say, I mean, the city, you know, we live in a really active city, and so, you know, planning a public event happens every day. Right. So this is their work. I mean, there's people that this is what they do, and they meet with people all day. So that's not a big deal for them. The Women's March in San Francisco had a particular configuration, different than maybe any of the other marches, which was that the West Coast Walk for Life, which is the pro-life anti-abortion march, was on the same day as the Women's March in the premier spot that we wanted at the premier time that we wanted. And so we had to figure out how we were going to be able to do this thing, because in an event of, at that point we thought we would have 30,000 people. An event of that size really wants to be at Civic Center and go down Market Street. It doesn't want to be
right
in the park in the rain with people getting all muddy. So the police were supremely helpful in helping us figure that out. And the city, so ultimately, people kept showing up. We developed a really fabulous team, just kept, and most of it was organized on Facebook. So we just kept reaching out into this community of people, telling them we need volunteers, we need people, and you know,
the upshot of it was you did end up with, what, 100,000 people?
We ended up with 100,000
yes.
people.
Right.
Yeah. It was unbelievable.
Here's my question now, if I may. That was a raging success because there are things that need to be said, and this was saying it. What next?
So, you know, it's interesting because that...
And the reason I ask this is because once isn't going to do anything.
So I'm going to disagree.
Okay, good.
I'm going to really disagree with that. Because that what next question started even before the march happened, which really speaks to what we do in American culture, which is that we don't stay present with what is. We're always looking for the next thing. We're always ahead of ourselves. We're always thinking about next month and not being here right now. And I feel like the experience of the Women's March was really, it was more of an experience and a being than what people had to say. I mean, we made room for, I mean, very intentionally, we were nonpartisan. Mm-hmm. We were not anti anything. Mm-hmm. It was actually about what we were for. And I think that was the thing. That's a very feminine principle. And my own feeling is that this larger thing that wants to happen in our country and what the Women's March really spoke to about a lot of people is this kind of rising of the archetypal feminine. Or the divine feminine, if you want to call it. We live in a very masculine culture. You know, it was interesting that that's what happened in the political race, that that was the question. And there's many people who believe that Hillary was not elected simply because she was a woman.
And what the Women's March did was way beyond women's issues. It really opened up for me what feels like, and when I say the archetypal feminine, it's not about women. We all have masculine and feminine principles in us. It was more about the receptive, compassionate, open, connecting that's generally ascribed to the feminine attributes. And that's what the Women's March was. It was open to everybody. It was about caring for all of our citizens. It was about justice. It really was about people. It wasn't about money. It wasn't about budgets. It wasn't about defending ourselves. It was about connecting and loving each other and supporting each other and seeing each other.
But it also seemed to be about recognizing strength.
Absolutely. Well, there's tremendous strength in community.
So, is the benefit possibly? I know I tend to do that. What's next? And I remember years ago when there was an oil embargo, and we were supposed to. I mean, word went all around. Don't get gas in your car for 3 days. That'll show them.
Right.
What? Anybody can wait out 3 days. Raise the price 4 cents, and they're back ahead. So is. What I'm thinking is, why I say what next is not necessarily in planning something else, but what do you think will follow? Will people just take this strength into their own lives in a more productive way?
Well, what I've seen happen was, I mean, people were shocked. People were surprised. And there's, I mean, and tremendous, even people's lives were saved. I mean, we had like a young boy who's a closeted gay boy, and he said that he was considering killing himself. And because just the climate instantly was so unfriendly. And he came to the Women's March. He actually went to the Women's March in San Jose. Mm-hmm. And to be surrounded by all these people, he wanted to live. Mm-hmm. And that's, he wrote us a letter and said we saved his life.
Oh, he did?
Yes.
Oh,
so,
okay.
I mean, yes. Yikes. So, I think being inspired is not to be underestimated, and seeing for everybody to see, to be with 100,000 people, there were over 5 million people worldwide. Mm-hmm. That
you said over 5 million.
Over 5 million.
There were 33 in Antarctica.
Yes, there were people. I mean, there were
touching.
Almost 700 marches worldwide. Mm-hmm. And so it was way beyond what happened in America. It gave women the permission to come out and rise.
So, okay, so I really am, I suppose, misunderstanding this in a way, because I'm seeing it as delivering a message, and you're saying it is more an inner strengthening.
That's my experience of it. I think it's interesting because in the Women's March, we took flack for not having a platform. Specific platform. There were a lot of organizations that wanted to align with us, and what's your platform? And the platform was social justice and civic engagement and community connection.
Beautiful.
Which some people might say is kumbaya, but kumbaya is underrated. I'm a Girl Scout leader, you know, and I'm going to tell you that coming together in a community way is really, really important. It's one of the things that I see it in my therapy office. Most people are dying of loneliness. We're all connected and we never spend time with each other. So to come together in community, in connection, and to feel that enthusiasm, to feel the strength and the power and the courage of that, what happens, we really are stronger together. You know, that inspired immediately all the other movements that are happening. I mean, I get calls every week from, there's a science march, there's a tax march, there's Indivisible, there's Move On, there's, you know, there's so many organizations.
When I'm asking what's next, it's a non-question because the next keeps coming.
The next keeps coming. I think we gave people permission to come out and realize, not even, I mean, beyond permission, they experienced that they weren't alone. Right. You can't take that. You can't tell people. You can tell people you're not alone. But when you're with 100,000 people in this really generous, enthusiastic, really communal way, I mean, it was amazing. People were handing out candy bars to each other. I bought 1,000 raincoats because it was going to rain that day here in San Francisco. I bought 1,000 rain ponchos. Where can I give them out? Because people had that generosity of wanting to share. And that was, you know, we've been asked,
how come it was such a peaceful, productive, nonviolent thing? And, you know, what did you do to create that? We didn't really do that anything. I mean, we did a lot of stuff to make it safe and right. to have people trained and all that. But it was what came out. It was what people wanted.
Yes.
That sharing of positivity, of empowerment, of standing, again, standing with what we're for rather than what we're against. Yes. And I think there's more power in that.
Oh, I agree with that. I agree with that. And I want to just take this segue, if I may, because I am about letters and love letters. And in this conversation, you said that you got one from this young boy. Any appreciation letter is a love letter. And you still have that somehow in the archives, right? Do you ever write letters yourself? Are you a letter writer? Did you used to be?
Well, I'm an email writer, and I do, and I journal frequently. So, okay. Yes, and sometimes I write letters that I don't send, you know, but...
So those are three sentences that I would love to just discuss for a minute, because email I love for the immediacy, and I happen to use it as more like letters. But it doesn't last forever. And what was the other thing you said? Email and, well, that you sometimes write letters. Oh, journaling.
I journal.
That's lovely, and that's personal. That's to you. Mm-hmm. Wonderful. And the other one, sometimes you write letters that you don't send. Why don't you send them, if I may?
Oh, well, those would be letters that of all the things that you'd like to say that it's probably better to not say and just get them out and then it's done.
Okay, so I feel that anything you want to say, even the angry, can be said in a compassionate way that makes it a love letter.
It's true.
Yes.
It's true. Say what you mean, but don't be mean when you say it. But sometimes you have to say it in the mean way, in my own, if I can say it in the mean way.
Yes, and that's part of planning a love letter. That's
exactly.
Right. But I have a question. You are... clearly an important part of a huge history that in years to come, people will look back and say, did you hear about that? And Renee McKenna was the one who, people will talk, you know.
Right, no, I mean, it's already billed as an historic event, certainly.
Because it is.
It is.
And the planning of it was historic. And I'm thinking, because I can't help it, but Facebook was enormously helpful to you in this.
Tremendously.
Did you ever think of writing a letter to the head of Facebook, to Zuckerberg?
Oh, that's an interesting idea.
I think
it really did facilitate this entire process.
Yes. Wow. I think of love letters like that. And you keep a copy, of course. But in your own handwriting, not an email.
What a beautiful idea.
If you do it in indelible ink on good paper, oh, his great-grandchildren will see it. People don't throw those away.
Oh, that's a beautiful idea. I'm a strong believer in... again, positive breeds positive.
And expressing yourself clearly.
And gratitude is a really, really positive thing.
And that's a huge part of love letters. Letters of gratitude.
Right.
Thank you notes.
That's a lovely idea.
And the woman who helped you find your better self and give up drugs. And
oh, I've written many, many letters to her.
Oh, you have?
Oh,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. Many, many letters to
her. I'm just curious. Do you have copies of those?
I do.
Because I say that all the time, and I don't always do it myself. I don't do it. But all these things are going to be important.
It's true. It's true. I save my journals. I have stacks. Sometimes I've sorted through them. And
but there's something about, yes, and when your great-grandchildren, should you have them, find that in your own handwriting, that's going to be gold.
It's an, yeah.
But there's something about finding an envelope on your pile of drab guch that is known as our mail today, mm-hmm. a handwritten envelope.
It's
handwriting
true.
That is like a sack of diamonds delivered to you. Mm-hmm. I bet Mark Zuckerberg doesn't get many of those.
It's true.
Yes. Oh, I hope you do it. Okay.
Oh, I like that idea. No, I think that feels like instruction. I think I'll do that.
Perfect. Thank you for doing this with me. Let's say, I mean, I don't, people can go and look up your name, but you've got a website that I would just like to mention because you're painting is so powerful.
Thank you so much.
Gorgeous. Everything you do does lead to one hat, really.
Oh, that's lovely.
I mean, you could trade in all your hats for the one that says, permission to be your best, strongest self. You know, follow me.
So my art website is reneemckenna.squarespace.com, and my therapy website is just reneemckenna.com.
Okay, thank you so much. I have so many other questions, If you ever have something else that you'd like to talk about and share with the world that listens to this, will you come back?
I will. Thank you, Janet.
I'm going to invite you. Okay, thank you,
dear.
It's
been so fun.
Until next time, this is Janet Callen saying goodbye, and we'll talk to you later, hopefully soon again with Renee. Bye.